There is no normal.
There is
anymore.
No normal. Yeah. No. It's up to you to redefine that now.
Yeah.
And actually, what you're feeling right now is exciting because it's telling you your soul is ready to take its next step to grow.
Yeah.
When you feel unsettled, you feel as though nothing's happening, you know, you're stuck. It's telling you your soul is ready. So start planning what you want that to look like.
Mm.
So if you're not sure who you are, you have the choice of who you are. And that is a really powerful place to be.
Yeah.
And welcome back to The C Word, the podcast for cancery people. I'm your host, Helen King. If you like what you hear today, please subscribe on iTunes or Spotify. I wrote about my guest today in the piece that was published in the Sunday Star Times during Breast Cancer Awareness Month back in October. I have always referred to her as the Happy Lady. I met Shona Herndahl at the cancer retreat that was held in Auckland late last year. I had just finished my Herceptin treatment, which signalled the end of all of my cancer treatment. Unlike Shona, who was absolutely glowing, a positive ray of sunlight, I was the complete opposite. I was a ball of emotion and had no idea what to do with it. And her positivity utterly fascinated me. How does a person go through an experience like cancer and come out with so much hope and optimism? I tracked Shona down and sat down with her recently to find out what the happy lady's secret is. It has always intrigued me of how a person can go through, you know, really challenging things like you have with your cancer and other things that were happening around that time, and be this amazing, effervescent, positive person. So it's so nice to have you here so I can ask.
I have my down days too.
Yeah. Tell us your secret.
Okay. Well, I think the secret for me was 2 years before being diagnosed with cancer, I'd lost my beautiful husband. And ours was a beautiful love story because we met at 19 when we were both at training college and didn't meet again for another 27 years.
Oh, wow.
And I met him in a staff room because I had a business whereby I did workshops in high schools, and he came up to me and reminded me that he knew me. We'd had one hot date. And I said to him, did I teach you once? And he just beamed from ear to ear. He had this most beautiful big smile, and he was the most gorgeous Cook Island man, and he was looking ever so handsome with a shaved head and bodybuilder body, and I thought, my goodness, who is this man? And so he did remind me, and so 12 months later, we kind of got together. Unfortunately, 7 years into our marriage, he had a weak heart, and he got a infection in his heart, and he passed away. And that was really tough. That was really tough. But it also gave me, once I came through that grieving process and try to make sense of it, I just came out with this immense sense of gratitude. And I was just so grateful that we had had, we were together probably 10 years altogether, and we'd had 10 years of fun and laughter and adventures and just beautiful love, that I realised that I was the lucky one because we were together. And that we'd had this beautiful life, and even though it was short together, it was quality. And so I ended up being very grateful, which actually gave me a renewed courage, a courage I didn't know I had.
Wow.
So when I was diagnosed with cancer 2 years afterwards, I had to pull on that courage. Mm. I had to find it. And we've all got it. It just has to be tested to know that it's there. But we all have it, and it's deep inside us. And if we dig deep enough, we'll find it.
Yeah. And so you had breast cancer.
That's correct.
How was it found?
It was just a routine mammogram, you know, just the caravan. You know, in the car park by Pack and Save. And you go along, and I remember one time Steve came with me and he sat in the car, and I said to him, gosh, my life could change today, sweetheart.
Yeah.
And that mammogram was clear. Well, 2 years later, and without him sitting in the car park, I had the test, and a couple of weeks later, had the phone call to say, please come back. And I guess it's always the phone call that we dread.
Yeah.
So it was a total surprise.
Yeah.
So routine mammograms are really, really good.
Yeah, and so important to keep on top of it.
Very much so. Don't put it off.
But I relate to that idea that when we go through immense grief and we learn resilience around that, we learn how deep we can go when times get tough. And I think for me, that's what I learned, is that, you know, you have to dig deep, and it's hard and it's painful, but just having that knowledge that you can do it is kind of what propels you through.
Mm. I think that I came across this lovely quote the other day, and it said, cancer is a gift wrapped in shitty paper. And yeah. I think, you know, the journey does give you a lot of blessings. And
yeah.
I think if you just take a moment and think about what those blessings are, then you can begin the healing process.
Yeah.
And how your mind operates and how you think about it all and how you're reacting to things actually determines whether your body is going to click into its healing mode or not.
Yeah.
And we need it to click into healing.
Yes. Mm. And I guess that was... I think healing is an interesting word, because I think when we're in the medical system, when we have the cancer, you know, in that context, they are healing you. They are trying to fix you. They're trying to, you know, take that cancer out.
Mm.
But when you come out the other side, healing becomes something very, very different. And I think, you know, I've often spoken about this, that actually that's the hard part. Trying to figure out, how do I heal myself now?
And how do you live now?
Yes. Yeah.
Because you're given this, you know, when you finish your treatment, you're given a brochure. You know, with 10 bullet points on it. And you go, so what happens now?
Mm.
How do I live now?
Yeah.
Well, that's actually where the true healing begins.
Yeah.
Because cancer is a wake-up call, and it's to work out, why did we get it in the first place? So what were those triggers to make sure that we don't go back to that, and we learn what it is that has triggered us. So I feel that I got the cancer because I'd lost Steve. And often people talk about, there's often a major event that has occurred ahead of time that has possibly triggered this. And so I think that if we can work out what's in our lives that's triggering this and change that, then we're beginning on that path of healing.
That's so funny, because I have found that too, and I've had small conversations with people about, you know, because you always think, why did I get cancer? And I think that stress is under researched. Your oncologist is never going to say, you were very stressed and that's why you have got your cancer. But a lot of people I have met have had a similar thing, where maybe 2 years prior, something very big happened. And that was certainly true for me. And then, 2 years later, I got the cancer. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting when you go through something major in life, and I remember people saying to me when I lost Steve, oh, look after yourself, won't you? You know, that's just what people say.
Yes.
And for me, looking after myself meant I got a new haircut and a new outfit. I didn't realise that really looking after yourself actually meant, on a deep cellular level, you need to look after yourself. And because, you know, we've got this electromagnet field around us, and when it gets dented, when you're going through emotional stuff, then that's when the disease can come. And so we've got to keep that electromagnet field around us really strong. And I don't think that traditional medicine teaches us how to do that. So we have to look outside of that. So doctors are just trained to get rid of it.
Yes.
So they'll just, you know, take it out in some way. But it's what happens after that, or actually during that process. If we can have that process working alongside traditional medicines, then we have a better chance of actually clicking our body into healing. And one of the things that drew me to that cancer healing retreat, the healing circle, was when the oncologist said, when the mind, body and spirit are in line, that's when the miracles occur. And, you know, when we deal with all this stuff, what often happens to us is our lives can become a lot more smoother. Because we're starting to think differently about our lives, and we're expecting different things. I mean, I met this beautiful woman when I was having her septum at Auckland Hospital, and she said to me, I want to get involved in this sort of work, but I don't know how yet. And she said to me, I'm going to send you a book. And so she did, and it was by Joe Dispenza, and it was called Becoming Supernatural.
Yeah.
And he talked about how we need to change ourselves at a cellular level so we walk towards a new future, not the one that we're always putting out for this chaos and so forth, but we program ourselves that we walk towards this new future. So that comes, and it starts with recognizing what those fears or anxiousness or sadness, whatever those emotions are, we need to recognize them, we need to embrace them, we need to make sense of them, we need to do whatever we need to do to let them go, and then we change our future.
Wow. I want to go back a few steps, because I'm really curious about what it was like for you being diagnosed with cancer and then going through the treatment. How did you cope with it? How, you know, what was that like for you?
That was scary for me, because I had a business that I was doing workshops in high school. So I was out in front of a group of, you know, 16, 17 year olds every day.
Yeah.
And the thought of losing my hair, my thought of looking terrible, because one advantage you can have walking into classroom is wearing a bright lipstick, because you look, you think, oh, okay then.
Yeah.
Right, okay, there could be a bit of fun here. And so I tried very hard to, first of all, keep my hair, and that didn't work. Yeah. So I ended up getting a grey wig.
Yeah.
And that actually was really, really good. Although the getting of the wig is a really awful process.
Yes.
So that's a whole different conversation. Yeah. But, you know, first of all, that was tough, because I needed to, I was thinking, will I be able to keep working? And I was really fortunate in that I didn't have a lot of reaction to the chemo, and that I was very grateful for. And I just did things like had my ginger, you know, root ginger cut up into tea when I was feeling nauseous. I ate well, no alcohol, just tomato juice. I just thought, what can I do to make sure I get through this really well? And could I keep working? That was the other thing.
Wow, yeah.
Because it was high energy working in a high school day, putting on a one-day workshop and a lot of pressure in that day, and then to turn around and do it tomorrow.
Wow. That is huge, because when you're in front of people, that you are really are giving a lot of your energy.
Oh, you do. And you can easily be judged as well, you know. And so it is. It is a biggie. I was fortunate. I had beautiful staff who really wanted to do more, and so I just made sure I wasn't working on a Monday and a Friday.
Wow, yeah.
So it just gave me a longer weekend, and I could do my healing in between sessions.
Yeah. And you got to the end of your treatment, and what was it like? Did you feel different? Did you sort of think, how do I, proceed from here?
Yes. Well, the interesting thing is I had come across a fabulous place called Halo. And at HALO, I first began going to HALO to have some Reiki healing done just prior to the beginning of a new treatment. So when I began my radiation, I went to HALO to have healing first. Mm. And at the end of all my radiation treatments, I went back to HALO to have some more healing.
Mm.
But also on that journey at HALO, Nicola runs these wonderful spiritual awakening courses in the evenings, and I joined that. And I came to realise that the cancer, there was a bigger picture here.
Mm. Yeah.
And therefore I could begin to make peace with it. And I had to work out what was that bigger picture and how do I work towards that picture.
And how did you figure that out?
I figured it out because I've always liked helping people.
Yeah.
And I believe that life gives you something and you have to decide what you're going to do with it.
Mm.
And I'd been in my business for 20 years. I knew that I was kind of looking for a change, but when Steve passed, all I wanted to do was keep things going in normal routines.
Mm.
And when I got the cancer, I looked at people and I looked at how they were reacting to the journey.
Yeah.
And I saw a lot of sadness.
Yes.
And a lot of fear. And I realized then that I was learning a lot on this journey.
Yeah.
That because I like helping people, maybe there was a place for me to support people going through this journey.
Yeah.
So I started to explore how could I do that.
Wow. And what sort of steps have you taken? We're talking before about all the amazing things you've done. What are the steps you've taken to set yourself up to be someone that can do that?
So the first thing I did during lockdown, COVID is another opportunity, is I did a course in mindfulness.
Mm.
So I learnt how to become a mindfulness facilitator. At HALO, I'd learnt about meditation and I'd come across this fantastic app that everybody can use and it's free. And you can find the apps that will work really well for you. So mindfulness, I began doing that. I loved my Reiki healing and really felt that it was making a difference. So a couple of weekends ago, I completed my workshop and now I have my master's in Reiki.
Wow.
I also learned during that journey there was a lot to do with energy in our body and often pain is caused by energy not moving in our body. And we need to get the energy moving in our body. So I've done this lovely course called the Eden Healing Technique.
Mm.
And it's about healing energy. So I'm just completing that now.
Yeah.
And I just love that. Anybody can do healing energy on themselves every single day.
I think a lot of people go through cancer and come out very defeated in a way. And I know for me, and I've spoken to other people who sort of would talk about it, you come out and I mean your body can be different. You've been through an enormous medicalized process. And I think I spent a lot of months just not knowing who I was anymore or not really recognizing myself. In fact, I find it really hard looking at photos of me before because I don't even recognize that person to what I see now, and trying to make sense of it all, and even down to what do I like wearing, what can I fit on my body now. I still have the fatigue, you know, there's all of this stuff and we don't know what to do with it. And we're not taught to what to do with it, because I think there's this sense of, and I bring this up so many times now, but I still find it hilarious that my oncologist's advice was, and now we encourage you to go and get on with your life. And thinking,
but who am I?
You what now?
Yeah.
How does one do that? And I think that's what led me to the healing circle, was that I had no idea what to do with myself. I was so full of grief and trauma from the experience. And there was this expectation of, okay, well, it's done now. You just, you can carry on.
Normal.
And there is no normal
anymore.
There is
no normal.
Yeah.
No. It's up to you to redefine that now.
Yeah.
And actually, what you're feeling right now is exciting because it's telling you your soul is ready to take its next step to grow.
Yeah.
When you feel unsettled, you feel as though nothing's happening, you know, you're stuck. It's telling you your soul is ready. So start planning what you want that to look like.
Mm.
So if you're not sure who you are, you have the choice of who you are. And that is a really powerful place to be.
Mm. And this is the thing I remember about you from that weekend, is that you talk about that cancer gave you this amazing opportunity to redefine yourself, to reinvent yourself.
It did.
And I thought, that's amazing.
Mm.
what a fantastic way to think about it.
Well, I think before cancer, I was a bit frumpy. You know, I was, I didn't know how to put clothes together. I was trying to age gracefully.
Yeah.
I used to look at women who had it all together in their clothes. I go, how do I look like that?
Yeah.
But when I got diagnosed, it was really, I mean, this is all superficial stuff, but it actually made a big difference to me, was my beautiful stepdaughter. She found a person to tattoo my eyebrows.
Oh,
now,
wow,
I was losing my eyebrows anyway because I was getting older and they were blonde. And so I had no eyebrows anyway. And so I went to this lady and suddenly I had these soft grey, lovely eyebrows. And I said to my doctor, I'm keeping these eyebrows to my 80s. I said, I love them.
Mm.
And so that was actually the beginning. And then I went to Farmers and I took all my makeup to Farmers. And I said, okay, this is the makeup I've got. This is the journey I'm going on. But how do I keep myself looking fresh?
Yeah.
So I didn't have to spend any money. I just used what I had, but I had to relook at how I was doing it. And then, of course, I lost my hair and going through that journey of getting the wig. And I got a short grey wig and everybody liked it. And I thought, I don't have to be blonde anymore.
Yeah.
Right. Okay. People like this. So when my hair started growing back, it was growing back grey. So I kept it grey. And now I just have a short grey kind of pixie style. So that was actually beginning to change my look.
Yeah.
And I actually liked it. So it made me feel good. And when you feel good on the outside, you can then start working out what's happening on the inside and start looking after yourself on the inside.
Yeah, and that I think we've touched on it a little bit of the book Radical Remission and Radical Hope. I have started listening to Radical Hope, and for anyone who's not familiar with it, it's written by Kelly Turner, and she has done research into people who go into spontaneous remission, isn't it? So there's no rhyme or reason for it.
No.
In a way.
No, either the tumour stops growing, or it decreases in size, or it disappears completely.
Mm. And so she researched people, and she started finding commonalities. Mm. And the thing that I find so interesting about what she found, it wasn't everyone went vegan and started,
well, got rid of all the toxins in their house or those sorts of things,
or lived in a yurt and that wasn't the commonality.
No, they're simple things.
Yeah,
but one of them that was really powerful is positive emotions, because that really will increase your immunity.
Yeah.
And everything, we have to do everything we can to recharge our immunity. And so those things are not, they're just good common sense things.
Yeah. So, because you've started looking into training around radical remission.
Mm.
What was it about it that really led you to it? What is it about her research and the, I guess, the fundamentals that really draw you to those ideas?
That there's always hope.
Yeah.
That's the first thing. And I think if you've been given a diagnosis, there's no place in our hospital system of a place of hope.
Mm-hmm.
But if everybody was given radical hope, you would have hope.
Yeah.
And you could start working out. So what does my body need? What are the things here? I might not do all 9 of those things, but I might do 6 that are right for me. Then that's a huge step forward.
I think a lot of people get through their cancer treatment and probably come into that same space of who am I, where am I, what do I do now? Because it does change us. It really does. When you, when you're faced with your mortality, you're really forced to kind of think, you know, how do I want to spend the rest of my days?
Or what has it taught me?
Yeah.
And, you know, cancer teaches you, and as I learnt with my husband, because he passed away in his sleep, was life changes in a second.
Yes.
In a second, our life is 1 minute one way and 1 minute the other way. So if life is that precious, then why aren't we living our best life? And what it does once you've had the diet, you've come through the journey, for me personally, is I don't put anything off now.
Yeah.
You know, I don't wait. I'm wearing the best perfume I've got. You know, I'm not saving it for the hot date.
Yeah.
It's, you just get out now and live life because you know that tomorrow it can be different. So just enjoy today.
Yeah. Yes. That's so
true.
That's
all you've got. And that's what it reminds you. And there's a blessing that teaches you that. So you don't put off the things that you would love to do or how you wish to live your life. What are you putting it off for? Work it out. What's going to give you joy most days? How do you want to live that life? You've got to earn money. How we have to. We live in the world that we need to earn money. So how much do you need to earn? What's going to make you? And COVID taught us. It really brought us back. I actually think it was the world rebalancing itself.
Yeah, absolutely.
And boy, weren't we lucky to be living in New Zealand. But it also, that lockdown period taught us a lot about ourselves.
Yes.
Some of us made the most of it, some of us didn't, some of us saved money. You know, all sorts of things happened. We cooked more, we exercised more.
Some of us bought a lot of fabric online, and I'm not saying that was me.
Okay, then. I hope you've got a sewing machine.
And an overlocking.
Okay, good deal. So therefore, maybe that's telling you that there's a creative outlet for you.
Yeah.
Is that you were drawn to be buying this fabric.
I want to touch on grief a bit because I know that losing a partner is enormous. And also, you know, going through a major illness is, you know, creates grief. How have you managed that grief? How have you moved through it in a way that it means that you don't get stuck in it?
Well, that was actually a really big lesson to me because when Steve passed, and we lived down a long driveway at that time, I think I just lived in the house and I didn't socialise very much because I didn't want to talk to people.
Yes.
I mean, they were talking rubbish.
Yeah.
And I've had, you know, had a major thing happen in my life.
Yes.
And so rubbish was no longer important to me.
Yeah.
And I think I hid away for a little while with him. And then I met a woman who had lost her husband. And she was still in the grief 13 years later.
Wow.
And that was my wake-up call to go, I don't want to be like that. And you have to find the courage to get yourself out of it and do small things to get yourself out of it. With the cancer diagnosis, I think I just, like most patients, I did everything that the doctor wanted me to do. And that probably happened for the first 12 months of the journey until I discovered that there was actually more that I could do for myself.
Yes.
And that got me back to being excited again.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I came out of it much quicker.
Wow. I'm always intrigued by, you know, the different ways people deal with their cancer diagnosis and how, you know, what we can learn from each other and how we kind of come out of it. And I think for me, I make sense of things through this sort of thing, through that connection and storytelling and those sorts of things. Because I guess there's always that curiosity of how have other people done it? Because I don't want to be that woman either, 13 years later, still
in grief.
Yeah.
But I think life gives you things and it talks to you. And that day, life was talking to me saying, do you want to be like her?
Yes.
Or do you want to move on? And it was right in my face then that I needed to move on. So what did I have to do that? And that's where you have to find your courage, because it's hard.
Yeah.
I've just recently sold our house where we were married in that house. He passed in that house. And I could stay in that house and be happy. But my life then isn't moving on. So it was a really big thing for me and my two lovely stepchildren to actually sell that house.
Yeah.
But I had to reassure all of us that we weren't, Dad wasn't, that we were now just going to take away the memories.
Yes.
The memories were coming with us.
Yeah.
And that's what we were going to hold on to. And we were going to hold on to those lovely routines and rituals that we have when we do gather as a family. So in order to, what did I have to do to create the change? And one was a major one, which was actually selling the family home.
Wow.
And I did that just after COVID.
Mm. Wow. And that is huge.
It is huge. It's huge because all your memories are there. All our love life was there.
Yes.
And so it was big, but we did a beautiful blessing on the house on the day I closed the door. And I think what Māori and Pacifica, because Steve was Cook Island, and I learned so much from him. And I think Māori and Pacifica do rituals at things so well.
Yes.
And they acknowledge events. And that gives us a place, whether it be a blessing, whether it be a speaking, or whatever it is. But those rituals gives a beginning to something and an ending to something.
Yeah, and there's there is transformation in ritual.
Absolutely, and it gives you permission. I've done everything I can, and I've honoured and loved, and now it's time to move. Move on, knowing that I now may not have the physical relationship, but you can begin to have a spiritual relationship.
Absolutely. I think that's important. I think I'm probably saying this for myself more than anything, that when we go through these major things, that it's not about being positive all the time and those sorts of things. It's about being able to acknowledge what you're feeling, allow some of those awful emotions, but know that you will move through them, and that every time we do, there's that little bit of layer that comes off.
Yeah. That's right. But do it with ceremony, because then you're putting an end to it.
Yeah. I really like that idea, putting an end to it.
And just saying, this feeling no longer serves me, so I take it out of my body. You know, and I do this by letting it go, whether you're a writer, so write it and then burn it or throw it into the water or do something that actually acknowledges that feeling, that emotion no longer serves me, and I allow it to go. Thank you for teaching me this.
Yeah.
Thank you for allowing this, that I've learnt this. So I'll recognise it in other people, but it no longer serves me, so I'm now letting it go.
Oh, I love that. It reminds me of one of the best holidays I ever had was in Vietnam, and I went by myself, and it was such an adventure. And I was in a small town. I always get them mixed up. It was not Hanoi. It's the other one where you can get everything made at Taylor. Anyway, it was a small town in Vietnam. And I was there on a special holiday or a special event. And we went out onto this lake in boats. And we all, you light a candle and almost like a paper, candle holder.
Lantern.
Lantern, that's the word I'm looking for. I can't find my words today. And you let them out, and you let them go. You let your hopes and dreams go out, and that sort of thing. And I think you're right. I think our repressed Anglo-Saxon background doesn't always serve us, because I don't think we do have that idea sometimes of letting go, or that ritual around major decisions or events and things that allow us to acknowledge, then let go.
You're giving it permission to let it go.
Yeah.
I give you permission now to go.
Yeah.
And there's so many ways that you can do that. It's so healing. Mm. And then you walk with a new lightness about yourself.
Mm.
And you're one of the things I did at the beginning of the year is knowing I had my eye on this house, and I thought, how am I ever going to afford this house? So I popped it on a treasure map. So I'd been watching this house being built, and I popped it on my treasure map with other things that I wanted to attract into my life for the next 12 months. Well, I moved into that house yesterday, so I took it off the treasure map and said, now let's focus on the others. And so that actually for me, because I'm really visual, I needed to have that visually and to put it on with all the words and pictures that described how I wanted to live for the next 12 months.
Oh, that's fabulous. I feel like this is a good place to stop, because I could keep asking you questions to try and sort out my life. You see, these are really for me. I ask people on to try and fix my life.
Well, we all love listening to them because we can all learn from other people.
Yeah.
It's wonderful.
Thank you so much for coming on and sharing this part of your experience, because I think, it's such an important piece of the puzzle for many of us of how do we heal. And when we don't have the tools, you can sort of feel very lost. So thank you for sharing.
Real pleasure. Many blessings to you and all our listeners today.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for joining me today. The C Word airs every Sunday on Auckland's Planet FM 104.6 FM or online at www.planetaudio.org.nz/the C Word. Thanks for joining me, and I'll see you next time.